He's recognized as one of the most legendary football coaches of all time. Arsene Wenger arrived in England in 1996 to take charge of Arsenal Football Club. The Frenchman came to London at a time when foreign coaches were still a rarity in English football. He started a revolution in how to prepare for matches, and his approach helped change the game forever. He introduced a new regime which focused on players' physical and mental approach, as well as their technical and tactical development. Wenger's methods were initially greeted with skepticism, but they soon proved to be successful. In 1998, Arsenal won both the Premier League and FA Cup, securing the club's first double since 1971, making it one of the best seasons in their history. Wenger's greatest achievement was produced by his team of so-called Invincibles. Arsenal won the league title in 2004 after staying undefeated for the whole season, something no other Premier League team has done. Overall, Wenger was in charge for 828 Premier League matches over 22 seasons, making him the league's longest-serving manager. He was the winner of 7 FA Cups and 3 league championships. Wenger stepped down in 2018 after more than 2 decades of service. Former Manchester United manager Alex Ferguson said at the time, "He is without a doubt one of the greatest Premier League managers, and I am proud to have been a rival, a colleague, and a friend to such a great man." Wenger didn't leave football altogether. Shortly after, he was appointed as FIFA's Chief of Global Football Development, tasked with overseeing the worldwide growth of the sport. He educates coaches and is working on developing a program to help former professionals enter management.
You know, I would like to share what I've learned, but in an efficient way. So I hate administration, and I think I can. I learned a lot about human beings, and football has today a fantastic responsibility in the world. We live in a world where sport has become the religion all over the world, and world football has a huge responsibility now, and if I can help a little bit, why not?
FIFA's talent development scheme aims to raise the standard of national teams around the world for both men and women. Wenger is leading its pilot phase, with 7 countries chosen to kick-start the project. His achievements were formally recognized when he entered the Premier League's Hall of Fame, the highest individual honor awarded by the competition. At 73, looking back, were all the sacrifices he made worth it? We'll find out over the next half hour as Arsene Wenger talks to Al Jazeera. Arsene Wenger, thank you for talking to Al Jazeera. I want to start by asking you about your project now that you're working on. What do you hope to achieve?
Look, by analyzing the world of football and the world globally in 211 countries, I realized that in most of the countries, people don't get a chance to play at a decent level. So we created what we call the talent development scheme. That means we want to create an opportunity for all the children, boys and girls, from 11, 12 years old to develop and to have a chance to play. We send the coaches in, FIFA pays for the coaches, and we create academies where we can give them all the talents, the chance to develop as a football player. What is the second ingredient that is very important to have a good chance to become a good football player is to put the best with the best. So we try to regroup the best together and to give them quality coaching.
It's a great idea and it's a great scheme for, you know, to try and give people equal opportunity. And I know it's a new, relatively new project developing since 2019. Is it working? Can it work?
At the moment, we have 7 pilot countries, you know, where we initiated the project because we need the cooperation of from the MAs, the federations. And at the end of the year, 2023, we will be in 35 countries approximately, and in 24 we will be in 100 countries, I believe, So of course it's a huge amount of work, but I'm personally convinced that there are too many countries in the world where real talents don't get a real chance. And we want to change that. If we do it well, what of course we'll dedicate our energy to do, I think we'll really change the world of football and give everybody in the world a chance. There's no better project than that. And because at the moment you would say that Europe is ahead in developing players, and we see that many immigrants coming to Europe get a chance to play, they get a good coaching, a good development program, and they make a big career. But there's many people in the world, boys and girls, because the girls as well, most of the time they start to play too late, you know. Football, unfortunately, you play with your feet. Mm-hmm. And to educate your feet to play, you have to start early in life. And it's decided between 5 and 12, technically. The technique is not enough, but without technique, you're never a football player. Mm-hmm. And that's why we want to give everybody an opportunity.
It brings me to the 2022 World Cup. We saw countries like Morocco and Japan do very well. What do you think led them to that success?
First of all, I worked in Japan for 2 years, 95, 96. And Japan started a professional league in 93. But they did things well, properly, like the Japanese know, are well organized. They dedicate the energy and the money to develop their football. Then created academies. And all over the world, the result is the same. The 20 best FIFA ranked countries are the 20 countries who have the best education system inside their country. And Japan is one of them. Morocco, at the moment, has made huge effort. I visited Morocco recently, and they have developed their development of their youth system, and they have a fantastic training center in their country. And overall, they have as well many people who are educated in Europe and who played for their national team. So they have, I would say, a combination of abroad education and home education. And but they work very well. It's two countries mm-hmm. who understood that to have good national teams, you need first to take care of your youth.
Let's look ahead to 2026. It will be a much bigger World Cup, 48 teams compared to 32. But is it a chance? Do you think developing countries will be encouraged to maybe invest more into football for a chance to maybe they can qualify?
I believe so. For example, Africa has 54 countries. They have 5 countries at the World Cup. And Europe is 55 countries. There are 13 countries in the World Cup. Mm-hmm. So you could think it's not balanced. And by getting 48 countries to the World Cup, a continent like Africa will have 9, maybe 10, because there's one playoff possible. So 10 countries in Africa looks to me not exaggerated. And it would be an incitement to do something for the development of your game. And it is the same in Asia, it's the same in Central America, the same in North America and South America. You know, you have more countries, you think you have a better chance to shine. And you know, football is, at the moment, I would say, it's conquering the world at an unbelievable speed. And it looks to be unstoppable. But that's why people who take care of football have as well a responsibility to develop it as well as possible. I think 48 countries, when you think you have 211 countries affiliated to FIFA, it's not even 25% of the countries who can go to the World Cup. I would say, personally, I support it.
But on the flip side, it's 40 more matches. It's a lot of football. Is it perhaps too much football? Is it going to tarnish the quality of the tournament, do you think?
Well, what is enough? What is too much? What is not enough? nobody knows. And I'm not the most objective person to decide that, because personally I watch football every day. So for me it's never enough. But there's only one response to that, is the audience, you know. And the audience of the World Cup is absolutely fantastic. And it's the only sport when the national team plays where the whole country is behind one team, you know. And so is a national pride at stake. Personally, I believe it's not too many games, but we have to consider that problem as a global problem, and of course to protect the players. Having said that, I would say a lot has been done for the players on the health front, better preparation, better prevention, better taking care of them, better protection during the games. The VAR has contributed a lot, again, to protect better the players from bad tackles, because you see everything on the screen. So overall, I would say the protection of the players has become better and better. And if you look at the careers of the players, they start earlier and they finish later. Let's not forget that the player of the tournament was Messi. He was born in 87. No, he was 35 at the World Cup. When I played, 35, you couldn't play football anymore. So it is. We have to protect the players always more. But as well, overall, I would say the results, the observation of the length of a career tells us is not too bad.
I want to talk to you about your managerial career at Arsenal, because you were very financially responsible when you were there. Mm-hmm. What do you make of the money going into clubs today and where it comes from?
Well, overall, I would say there's two different problems. One, the question you can ask, football is very popular, has an activity the right to turn down people who want to invest in the sport? I would say no. Any activity, business activity, has to be open to investment. The second part is how can we assure that the competition is fair, you know? And that is a bit more difficult today. I would say you have two categories in each league: the guys who have a chance to win the league and the others who try to fight to stay in the league. And so there's maybe a problem there, because of a competitiveness of the league inside is maybe not fair enough. But overall, I would say that this is down to the ownership, who has changed in the last 10, 15 years. And basically, today you have two kinds of owners: very rich people, billionaires, mm-hmm. or very state interested, like Qatar in Paris Saint-Germain. So overall, you have 54 owners in Europe now of clubs who are American. And the Arabic countries get interested as well, much in investment in football in Europe. It will be interesting, and football has to sit down together to see how we move forward by keeping the competition fair.
But could we see, you know, other countries, a league in another country, become more dominant than, you know, in Europe and England?
Yep, the economical rule is always a decisive one. Mm-hmm. And it's not a coincidence. The best players land always in the richest countries, in the richest league. At the moment, the richest league is the Premier League. And it has been developed. This was, I arrived there when it started in 92. I arrived there in 96, and the Premier League has developed and has become today the dominant league in the world. Will it last? Nobody knows, because the other leagues fight very hard to get rid of that domination, and but it's basically linked to financial resources, and to, at the moment the dominance of the Premier League is down to the international TV rights. And why? Because they have created interest in Asia, in the States, and so the whole world watches the Premier League on Saturday and Sunday.
Now, you have been a big backer of VAR. Do you think it's a success?
I think it's a huge success. By asking you the opposite question, if you think today we suppress VAR, people would complain, you know, because it allows us to have more right decisions. And at the end of the day, I was only a supporter of VAR because I think it gets you more right decisions. And overall, we are in the second stage now of VAR. Do we extend the competence of VAR? Because we have enough technology now to extend it. And we had another example the other night when Real Madrid played against Manchester City, where the ball was out. Mm-hmm. We are technologically able to say, no, this goal is not right because the ball was out. So we start in 2018 with VAR. Now, in 2023, I think we are mature enough to extend the use of VAR.
But do we need to be careful VAR doesn't affect the fluency of the game or take anything away from it, the romance of the game or the uncertainty of the game?
I'm 100% on your side on that. We need first to protect the fluency of the game. But the technology will be quicker and quicker, and today already it takes less time when you interrupt a game by VAR than before. And we will have the automated offside and the automated decisions. We go into IA, you know, and artificial intelligence might even replace you and me, you know, and and all the coaches. Yeah. You never know. So that will always be quicker. I would say we want to protect the fluency, but as well keep the human side in football.
Could we see a return of the European Super League, and this time could it be a success?
The European Super League will not work at the moment because I think people love their championship. There's two kinds of fans nowadays. You have the fans who support or a big player or a big club, and the fans is enthusiasm again as well for fans who support their local team, you know, and we want to protect the domestic championship. I think it was a wrong idea. Anything in Europe that is not purely on sporting merit will not be accepted. And in my opinion, rightly so. You do not want a protected league where nobody can go down. It will take the charm away from the European culture, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think, a bad idea, a misunderstanding what football is really in Europe.
It's been 5 years since you left Arsenal. Mm-hmm. What is your favorite memory of your time there?
Well, I have many favorite memories, but I would say basically if you speak to me, Arsenal, the atmosphere of Highbury comes into my mind straight away, the enthusiasm of the crowd, and it's more an atmosphere than any specific moment of my career at Arsenal. I believe that that club is built on values, on acting with class, and that remains with me, you know, and I hope I left that legacy, and today that continues, and that is the most important.
You took over in 1996. Did you believe you would have so much success?
Not at all, you know, when you, it is a little bit, a contract with a club is a little bit like a marriage. You love, you go together in a, and you know you have to act and behave like you will stay there forever, but knowing that it can end with 3-4 bad results.
Because I know you took it really hard. The defeats were very difficult on you. You were very hurt. You even said that you got physically sick sometimes after a defeat. Were they all that devastating, or was it a different level of devastating, your defeats?
No, I was always, personally, I believe as well, it hurts you physically, yes, to lose football games. And I'm like that since I am a young boy, was a young boy, and that will never change. And overall, I was happy as well at Arsenal because I had I need to feel I worked for something bigger than me, and that I can dedicate that energy to that something that is bigger than me. And of all, I was very happy to do that.
You only recently started going back to Arsenal to watch Arsenal matches. What was that like?
It was nice because you see people that you haven't seen for a long time, you know, and overall, I had to do that to connect with the club and to connect with the team that I met after the game. So it was very nice, a very great experience. And overall, I'm happy for having done it.
Do you approve what Mikel Arteta is doing there?
Yes, of course. I think they are doing very well. They have invested a lot. I think you have to give credit to the owner. He has invested a lot of money in the recent years, what was not happening before, but I believe it was the right decision. And they bought the right players, and I think Mikel Arteta is guiding very well the team, and they have played great football this year.
What about Erling Haaland? Like, he can score goals anywhere. Is there any stopping him?
Yes, of course, but you can always find a solution to stop the strikers, but the strikers usually finish the collective work of the team, you know, and more or less well, but he's doing it very well. He has kind of an animalistic force as well in him, that desire to be successful. And I like him because I feel he's really dedicated on what is essential, the priority. He's not in image, he's in winning. He's what his sport is really about, you know. And I respect that.
Are you done with coaching?
Yes. I'm never done with coaching because I feel I coach my team as well now in the world. You know, we have a team of coaches, of 100 coaches who work in the world, and you always take care of how well the sessions go. And you teach young girls and boys to develop all over the world. And so I'm not finished with coaching. I believe that I always behave like that in life, is that what is the most important is what is in front of you, not what you have done. You can learn from what you have done, but what is really mattering is what is in front of you. And overall, I would say this project is deep in my heart, and if I'm successful in doing that, I feel really can help many people to develop in the world and make football better in the world, what would be fantastic.
So you're not going to, you know, go back to the Premier League as a coach, not even for Tottenham?
No, not especially not for Tottenham, you know. They would burn me.
As a coach, you have to pretty much sacrifice all other aspects of your life. When you look back at it, was it all worth it?
Yes. There's two important things in life, the day you were born and the day you know why. And to me, it looked obvious that the why is football, you know. And so, yes, today, in hindsight, when I look at it, I think I sacrificed everything in my life for that. But it was what had a real meaning for me. So I cannot, it was me. And so there is no regret there.
Arsene Wenger, thank you so much for talking to Al Jazeera.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.